Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fine Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly. And joining us this week in the VIP tent is Lieutenant MJ. Hi, MJ.
Hello, that's me. How exciting.
Thank you so much for being here.
Yes, of course. I'm excited to talk about a show that's really wormed itself into my head for years now, but not as long as some.
You made a tremendous pitch when we did the season 8 mail call announcement. So this is near the end of the season, so I really couldn't wait to get to talk to you about it. Of course, we're talking about the 21st episode of season 8, Goodbye, Cruel World, which originally aired on February 11th, 1980. But of course, before we get to that, MJ, how'd you become a fan of MASH?
How did I become a fan of MASH? Here is a funny story about characters called Hawkeye. So I have been a comics fan, of the Marvel comics fan variety for pretty much my entire life. And it's something that I dip in and out of. My favorite series, of course, is the Matt Fraction, David Aja Hawkeye series. So that run is gorgeous, gorgeous art, and fun storytelling. And I was following people on the internet who were posting about this Hawkeye. I then I saw that some of them were also posting about another Hawkeye. And this was at least 10 years ago. So I was a wee teenager. And I looked at the screen caps of this show that they were posting. And I said, it's brown. I'm not watching that. And then some years elapsed. We were moving into 2022. And important context here, I began working for a university in quite dire circumstances in terms of administration. So I had a lot of animosity towards the brass. And it was around this point when I started seeing pictures of that brown show that I saw about, you know, a couple years ago. And then I was like, well, if everyone's talking about it this much, surely the brown show can't be that bad. I told a couple of my friends about it. And being a youngin, most of what they said was, what's that? And also, I saw that TV show, but I only ever heard the theme song because then I would know to turn the TV off. And I was like, this is really great. You're all selling it to me so well. So I sat down with my, unfortunately now ex-partner, to just pull up the pilot, which is not beloved.
Not a great way to start. Beloved,
but then I was so entranced by the Hawkeye in the brown show. I was so entranced by Alan Alda's sort of aura and general charisma, despite being, I think, pretty much everything that I wouldn't like in a person for a good couple of episodes in season one. And then I remember I took a photo on my phone saying, watching MASH now, in March 2022. And then by like 2 weeks later, I was all the way up into season three and then tacking up photos of the characters on my wall at work and then telling everyone, guys, you should be watching this. I'm putting on Radar's report right now. Let's go.
So have you finished the show? Have you completed the run?
I have completed the whole run. I took my time on it because I was watching it with my ex-partner, who did not want to, who was being very generous about it, let's put it that way. But she wanted to sort of only watch two or three episodes at a time, which meant that I was always rewatching. I know, I was always rewatching the episodes that I had already seen. So I was giving myself my own reruns. And I immediately set out to purchase the DVDs so that I could just continuously do this. And it took me 2-ish years. I only just finished watching it in 2024 because I had put off Goodbye, Farewell, Amen for I'd known it has a reputation, and I didn't want to see my dear friend Hawkeye be in such pain. But I made it through. I love the whole ride. Got lots to say.
Now, when you started putting pictures up in your office, did people come by and ask you what the hell that is, or did they know what it was? Did it get any
You
reaction at
know,
all?
the funny thing was that I was always explaining it to people, especially other 20-year-olds at on campus in university. And I was on a lot of, you know, working groups with people who were twice my age. And they would be the ones coming up to me and being like, "Hey, wait a minute. I know that guy.
Of course.
That's Alan Alda." And then I was like, "Oh, this is actually really beautiful. We're now going to become best friends, and I'm going to tell you my opinion about BJ Honeycutt." And then they would say, "Who's that?" Oh dear. It was I feel like even the people that are twice my age, I had to like really, really highball it. And I made a bunch of MASH pins, so like pin badges that I could wear around campus and or to meetings to see if I could just get someone to spot it and then entrap them
What did
into a
the pin say? Was it
conversation.
the show logo or pictures
It
or
was
what?
there was it was just screenshots of like Radar getting an egg thrown in his face, you know, or like I had a lot of Hawkeye sleeping. I feel like Alan Alda has this, such a cherubic quality when he's sleeping, because other you know he's like either I don't know he just has this his face that he has when he's taking a nap. That he puts on. I think, oh my gosh, I don't remember who had mentioned it. I think someone's talked to him about it where they were like, "Oh, I know what you look like when you're sleeping." And he was like, "What?" And it's because you're doing it all the time in your shows.
Wow. Do you still have these pins?
I do, and I rotate them out. There's like, you know, my favorite guy of the week can hang out with me. Currently, I have, well, on theme, I've been wearing Klinger around, specifically in his springtime outfit.
Okay.
You know, it's spring, sir,
The
outfit, that one.
the frock, the like picnic gingham dress or
That
something that he was
beautiful
wearing.
purple number. Oh
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah, because it's spring, or at least I'd like it to be. The temperature is speaking otherwise.
I remember I actually brought back when I worked at this other company and I had my own cubicle. I no, I had my own office. It wasn't a cubicle, it was actually an office. And I brought in some of my MASH action figures, which I have on the card,
Oh,
like, and I pinned them to the
yes.
wall. And the boss's daughter came by, and setting aside that she was just a stone cold idiot, she
Oh
asked me what
dear.
that was, and I told her.
No.
And the reaction was if I had just said, I don't even, like a mouse has four paws, but he doesn't wear a belt. Like it was just that, it was to her, it was just gibberish. And she rolled her eyes at me, and
No, yeah.
it was, I was not mad about that she didn't care about MASH because it's like whatever, but it was more the tone she took of like that happened before I was born, so therefore I don't need to know about it. And I find that to be an
Yes.
incredibly inquisitive, uninquisitive way to go through life. And I
Hey,
just was like, all right, well,
Alligator.
I'm sorry I talked to you, but she's the boss. She was the boss's daughter. I had to talk to her. So
Yes.
I'm glad
No,
you
for
got a better
sure.
reaction.
Yeah. I mean, it just speaks to just a strange incuriosity some people have about things that are old, which I totally understand that sort of generational divide. Like I see where it comes from, but I always find it useful to understand, contemporary media in sort of context with what came before it, and then also understanding what came before it and the context around the, like MASH, for example, is like it came out, in the thick of the 70s and the early 80s, and like it's responding to a cultural context in the same way that all of our media currently is responding to a cultural context. So it's just useful to understand all of it. And also the 70s, like there's lots of things to, talk about there. If you even, you know what? I'll even gun for like any time period before now. Like if you just choose to follow your nose for a little bit, the 1910s have a lot that you could find
Yeah,
out
so
about.
yeah,
Just lots of good stories,
I was alive during the 70s, and I can tell you, yeah, a lot was going on. So yeah,
A lot was going
it's,
on,
yeah. So,
exactly.
well, that again, that's fantastic. I love that you took your. I love how you got to it via the wrong Hawkeye. That's fantastic, right? I love that it went from the Marvel Comics Hawkeye to the MASH Hawkeye, and then threw a little bit in of the Last of the Mohicans Hawkeye too.
And now I have three of them because there's also the one from the anime Full Metal Alchemist anime and manga.
Oh
Yeah,
wow! Okay,
so
so yeah,
yeah. And that one's a
okay,
woman, so I'm like really stacking them up now.
all right. So, well, let's talk about Goodbye Cruel World. As I mentioned, it originally aired on February 11th, 1980. It was written by Tad Mumford and Dan Wilcox, and directed by Charles S. Dubin. One of the wounded is Sergeant Michael Yee, a bona fide war hero. Hawkeye works on him and is amazed by the sheer number of wounds Yee has suffered. Later in post-op, Hawkeye gives Yi the good news. He's going home. But instead of being overjoyed, Yi seems stunned and even a little upset over the news. After telling Yi the news, Hawkeye and Margaret leave him alone, and we see Yi pound his fist in frustration. Potter and Klinger call an impromptu meeting in Klinger's office. He has filled the room with items from home, all of them with an Arabic flavor. Potter puts it up to a vote from the doctors, but Klinger is less than happy when they all break down in guffaws over Klinger's version of good taste. Later, Nurse Kelly tells Hawkeye that Sergeant Yi has tried to kill himself by slashing his wrists. Hawkeye, Margaret, and Potter check in on him, and the damage is so extensive that he requires resurgery to patch it all up. Meanwhile, Klinger, so mad at being laughed at, decides to pull a scam, ending in him being discharged home. He fakes letters from Colonel Potter, working hard to perfect Potter's distinctive signature, and Father Mulcahy, planning on sending them into I-Corps. BJ discovers the plot and tries to talk Klinger out of it. Klinger pretends to go along, but then after BJ leaves, resumes his plan by sending the paperwork to HQ. Sidney Freeman arrives to talk to Sergeant Yi. He looks over Yi's record. He also served in World War II, and while he had a solid record there, it's nothing like the list of courageous acts Yi has attempted in Korea. Sidney talks to Yi and suddenly puts him under hypnosis. Later, Yi awakens, and he's shocked to learn that what he thought had just been a few minutes was actually 2 hours. Hawkeye notices Yi, post-hypnosis, is twitching his arm like mad and wonders if Yi is stable. Sidney insists that he is, telling Hawkeye that Yi is racked with guilt, fighting in a war against an Asian enemy. He plants a hypnotic suggestion in Yi's mind to twitch his hand every time he feels stressed, instead of committing an act of violence against himself. Sidney also surmises that all those acts of bravery on Yi's part were part of the same behavior. Later, Yi is released from the hospital, where Sidney will keep working with him until he's shipped home. Meanwhile, Potter apologizes to Klinger for not letting him put up any of his personal items and hurting his feelings. So he tells Klinger he can put up any one piece and also gives Klinger a 3-day pass. Klinger, now feeling guilty about setting his plan in motion, hotfoots it to I-Corps, where he has to bluff his way out of it with a colonel. He pretends to be Radar, telling the colonel that this Klinger fella is pulling a scam and the whole thing should be forgotten. Once home, Potter reveals that he knew about it the whole time and even gives Klinger some helpful tips on how to better forge his name. All right, MJ. So you specifically wanted to talk about this one. So before we get to the breakdown, what was it about this episode that really spoke to you?
Oh, it infuriated me. That was I so I love Klinger. He's one of the he has like a very fluid sort of character Right, he has strange character writing all throughout, but I think what sticks into my mind is his compassion for people. It's kind of all over this season, where he is pulling some strange grifts on occasion, which I don't oh I don't know. I'll have things to say about that maybe a little later.
Okay.
But he's so nice. He is always getting food for people. He is always, he got Hawkeye, that magazine, all the way from like Crabapple Cove. He's talking to Father Mulcahy when no one's coming to his sermons and like, gassing him up. He's so kind. And what made me so mad when I first watched this was that everyone was being so mean to him for decorating. Now, granted, I am not here to talk about if it's gauche or, I mean, I sort of am in terms of how that relates to Orientalist tropes, and sort of racialized identity. But also, and he did do a lot. It was a lot of redecorating. But he's kind of just making it homey in a way that makes me think, yeah, why do Radar and Klinger just sleep in the office so that anyone can just barge in and then not have a lick of privacy?
Where do they
Like,
change their
I know.
clothes?
Yeah. Like I think, it provided such a interesting sort of reframing of the rest of the cast for me, who I also love dearly. I've been following them for what, 8 seasons now. And despite their blunders and mishaps and, occasional moments of assholery, I love them. And when they walked in and started laughing, I felt so angry because, well, he's your friend. Why are you making fun of something that all of you, as Klinger points out in the episode, also do? It was just so odd to me. And whenever I get that sort of level of emotion, I think, okay, what's making me feel like that? I always think it's interesting to examine an emotional reaction because that is an interpretation of a text. I was clearly understanding it in some way. And I was about to say infamously, I don't think I'm that like vocal about it, but I watch MASH with the laugh track. And I know a lot of people don't do that because it changes the show and its tone and the way that certain things are presented. But because I like understanding things within historical contexts, I also wanted to understand what the show was trying to make me laugh at. And it really got into my head about just like, what's bothering me? And then, of course, every single time I forget whenever I rewatch this episode that there's an entire extra subplot.
This,
The
you could
season
argue
eight,
it's the
April
main
B-plot.
plot, considering it's the title of the episode.
I was like, well, see, it's a subplot for me. I'm thinking about Klinger right now.
Okay, all
No,
right.
there was an entire extra part of the story that I also care about deeply. And it's something I find really interesting, that like it's a story about immigrants and about migrant diaspora and specifically Asian American ones. And there's a lot of interesting sort of identity confusion here, because the first thing that comes up to mind is that like is Sergeant D immediately like one of the first things that we see from him is him defending his Americanness. And then I find that so compelling because, this race is very visual, right? It's something that there's a lot of visual signifiers for what you understand as, like ethnic traits. And then he's talking to, I think, Mulcahy and Margaret, in a scene. And then he makes baseball references. He's like proving to them, in a way where he's just like, I am American though, just so you know. And then I found that compelling, being an immigrant myself, and also just like, I don't know, understanding the emotional complexities of that. And then of course this turned into a Sydney episode as well. I
You
was
can't
like,
beat
oh,
it when you have a Sydney episode. No
I
doubt.
was
It's
like, I love that guy.
yeah.
I always forget that he's in it. And then when they call him up, I'm like, well, cheering and clapping. I am seated in my hello, Alan Arbus. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, I had heard those rumors that they wanted to make him a regular and he said no, and I don't know if that really would have worked, but I definitely could have seen him a lot more than once a season. They gave him one show a
Yes.
season. I think they could have brought him in
They could have
three
done
times a
more.
season, four times a season. It
That
would have
would have
been
been
fine. You
amazing.
know, it would have been absolutely fine. So, well, all right. Well, okay. I mean, by the way, I said that, the Sergeant Yi storyline is the title of the episode. That title really could work for both because it is Klinger attempting to sneak out of the army. And so you could argue in his own way, he is saying goodbye, cruel world, because he has been laughed at, as you just pointed out. We'll talk about that when we get to the scene. But I mean, in some ways, he is saying as well, goodbye, cruel world. And if you want to really pair it up, you could say the MASH crew are laughing at what they consider tacky, well, from their white male perspective, it's tacky. So you could argue that the Klinger is being kind of looked down upon for his ethnicity in a way. I mean, they're not really trying to do that, but you could argue that that is a little bit of that, and
For
that
sure, for
parallels the
sure.
Sergeant Yi story as well. So maybe you could apply that title to both
To
stories
both of them,
if you wanted
that's
to.
actually a really good point because there's like a whole thing when PJ and Klinger are interacting, and PJ's trying to convince him not to, not to go through with it.
Right.
Klinger's idea involves, take it, having a reinventing himself and creating a persona, a
Sven
Swedish
Lundgren.
persona, where so he's like actually saying, potentially saying goodbye to Max Klinger. So he's goodbye, cruel world. Sven is here now.
Sven Lundgren, exactly. Yumpin' yiminy.
Sven
So, all
Lundgren
right.
here.
Well, let's talk about the episode. It opens with a scene in OR, and the doctors are all talking about this newfangled invention called television.
Oh, I love that bit.
Yeah,
It's very
Potter talks
funny.
about that they have one at home, and Mildred says JJ likes to watch Jack Benny, and he's got a little ghost standing right next to him. We find out that BJ, through a joke, him and Peg don't have one. They just watch it through like the window of a department store. And then we get this Winchester joke where he says, oh, it's just a passing fad, it's a toy. And that is a thing that they would use across a lot of the Winchester episodes, is that he's always wrong. He's wrong about something that we know as viewers he's going to be wrong about, whether it's hula hoops or frisbees or the Kennedys. I mean, he mentions the Kennedys in it, and so now it's
Oh, I forgot about
television.
the Kennedys
They
one.
love to do that. They love to make Winchester the guy who is going, we all know he's wrong. They
He's
all
like
know
the
he's
old
wrong.
guard. He's the old guard of I enjoy this because they really play it up when they use David Ogden Stiers's, extensive knowledge of classical music for the character. But he's so funny. It's like, yeah, Charles, that, of course, that'll never happen.
So then they bring in Sergeant Yi, and they talk about everyone has heard of him. Margaret says we've heard about him in Stars and Stripes. We see that it is actor played by actor Clyde Kusatsu.
That's right.
Who is most has over 300 credits, which is just amazing. What a career. Most recently he's on the Netflix show Man on the Inside with Ted Danson. He's on, apparently he's a kind of like a regular on that because he's on multiple episodes. Of course, this is not his first appearance on MASH. He played Mr. Kwong
Of
in
course.
season two of the show. He played the bartender. And then, of course, he would come back in season 11 for the Joker is Wild episode. So this is not anything
My
he hasn't done
darling
before.
Paul Yamato.
But yeah, so this is Clyde Tsuwatsu. And he doesn't get a line here. He'll come back in a moment. And but we see that Hawkeye is working on him. Then we are joined in the office, and that's when we have the introduction of all of Klinger's stuff. Now, you could argue Klinger has most definitely gone overboard with
He's
the
gone,
amount of stuff. And I would say the beaded curtains especially are, they're getting in the way of hospital business, right? That's the one thing. But nevertheless, it is a fair argument that poor Klinger doesn't get to have even the remotest shred of personality in his where he lives. Everyone else gets to do all the stuff and he doesn't. So I do love all this stuff. Now I will ask you, of all the decorations here, we're kind of jumping ahead a little, but of all the decorations here, what one would you want to keep if you could?
Oh, out of all of them. I love the rugs on the walls.
Okay.
That I mean, I do see that, it is getting in the way of cabinets, some of them. But they are, especially, the way that Klinger talks about it. It's like family heirlooms, mementos. It's just something to like remind him. He's clearly very close to his family. They're writing him and he's writing them constantly. He misses them and being around like a lot of people who sort of understand him on that cultural level. So I would just like nick one of those, really.
I love that he points out that he's also got a Bowler of the Year trophy. So it's not all family stuff. It's stuff from sort of
Yes,
just his personal life.
which I do think is delightful. And he, why would you want that? But you know what? I'm on Klinger's side here. He can do
Yeah.
whatever he wants.
I would of all the stuff, I would say the using the beaded curtains and the carpets to give him to give his cot its own little room is probably the most fair use of everything because it doesn't really get in the way. And I do
He
like
doesn't
that
have a
he is,
room.
I like that he's attached the Toledo Mudhead banner to one of the carpets as
Yes.
well. I like all that stuff. So
It's so sweet. It's like he's sort of tying his like cross-cultural identity together in that way. And again, it's through sports again. And I find that it's so delightful. That's sort of that the main thing. There's this like shot at the very beginning where, it's like panning over and Klinger's on the step ladder and I think he's like hammering something down,
Yeah.
and you just see like get a whole glimpse of it, right? And it's like, I see it sort of. It depends on how you're viewing the shot, but when I first saw it, I was like, this is so fun.
By the way,
I enjoy this.
how did his family send him carpets all the way to Korea? That is
That
expensive.
is it. You know what? My bet is, they got together and they're like, we're gonna chip in. That's how my family does it. They're all gonna like, we're gonna pool together a set of things, and we're gonna get our guy over on the other side
But I
something for
mean,
himself.
could you even do that though? Like, think of how big a carpet is when it's rolled up. Could you, if you even literally went down to the post and said, send this to Korea, would they even take it? I don't, it seems like the army might have limits to the size of
No,
packages that
it's
could come
true.
over.
It's true. It's true. I choose to believe that they overcame all this through gumption.
Yes, the Klinger family is definitely full of gumption. There's that about that. So, yeah. So Potter is not happy with the decorations, and he says, "Well, fine, go find, round up the doctors, and we'll have a meeting about this." So then we cut to post-op, and then we see Hawkeye and Margaret and Mulcahy are talking to Sergeant Yi, and he's giving them one of his exploits, and he gets into that conversation you talked about where he has to prove to the second lieutenant that he is actually who he says he is. And the way he does that is asking about baseball, which is funny because that was a thing that, you know, gets at how prevalent baseball was in the culture in the 1950s.
For sure.
If you asked, I would argue 99 out of 100 people in America right now who won the World Series, they wouldn't be able to tell you. And neither would I. I don't think I'd be able to tell you either. You know, and I kind of follow baseball. I just don't remember this stuff. But yet, this is, you know, back then it was like that meant you were American. And this is getting to the beginnings of the episode's core, which is the distrust that Yi has to deal with simply because what he looks like.
Yes. I find this interesting because it was a here's some fun history for you. This was something that was obviously it's something that was actually experienced by a lot of Asian American soldiers. And like even in there's a couple of accounts out there. I think Joseph Owen's Colder Than Hell, which is about I'm going to forget what it is. I think it's Baker 1-7, that specific rifle company, has stories on Chu Yun Li, who was very decorated. He got all sorts of crosses. I don't know that much about the military. I don't know if you could tell. But for his military exploits in a similar way to Sergeant Yi. And this was, it was like, this is a real like story where in the field, in Chu Yun Li's case, it was sort of using Mandarin as like a cover to trick the Chinese soldiers into sort of like believing like into like, just like to getting them to come out of hiding. But then like he's using that sort of transnational identity of like having a foot on both sides to be able to like again prove your I don't know your cultural identity or your ethnicity to in, like for your own advantage or like it's not even advantage like for your own survival
survival.
And it's I find that so that's it's so interesting. And again, like you said, the baseball being such a big cultural, I mean there's so many episodes around baseball in MASH. I'm thinking of the one where Charles gets really really into it and then
Klinger's walking around in a Mudhens jersey in this episode.
Yeah, exactly. And so oh, excuse me. I'm going to clear my throat. I like that. That is, it's like, it's an American sport, you know. I find that incredibly because it's, and it's sports as like a. My train of thought's gone there. We're going to ignore what I just said. So yeah, I'm with you there.
So they tell Yi that he's going home and he looks, he doesn't seem happy. He just seems
thrilled.
Sort of stunned.
Yeah.
And yeah. They sort of pause on him as he's like, it just takes a little bit for that to sink in. And while that happens, Klinger comes in and grabs Hawkeye and Margaret and says there's an impromptu meeting in Potter's office, and then they run away. Now, then we cut to Yi in a scene that was always cut in syndication, so I never saw it until I got the DVDs, where we see Yi sitting there and looking not happy, and then he pounds the mattress with his fist. And, you know, it's a tiny cut to make, but pretty significant because it immediately starts telling you, okay,
Something's wrong. He's
lying. He's not just stunned. He's angry
about
what he's hearing. So
I really love that shot. It's interesting to hear that they didn't have it in syndication.
Yep.
Because I feel like it provides so much contextualization for what's to come. I feel like it could in cutting it, you could get a sort of it's almost like a bigger shock, in a way. But I like the build up to it because then you're sort of just left there wondering what's going on.
Yeah.
It works really well with the season 8 A plot B plot structure that they have going on.
The local syndicator in Philadelphia really leaned on the comedy. When it was time to cut something, he always cut. I say he, but I don't know it was a he, but I bet it was a he.
That's me.
I almost always cut the drama over the comedy. So if there was a silly plot, that got left behind, that got left in the show. And then if there was a more serious plot, that's the one who got removed. So everyone shows up and they are laughing uproariously at Klinger's stuff. They are being pretty insensitive, as you mentioned. They're not,
It's
they're making
wild.
fun of his taste. They're making fun. They're not just talking about that it's inappropriate to have this stuff in, as what Potter is going to explain is, the front lobby of MASH, but they really do go after him. And it is a little, as you say, a little upsetting to watch Hawkeye and BJ be so mean to him. I don't, Klinger's like Radar. He's like a puppy. And seeing them be so cruel to him is just goes past good-natured ribbing into like, oh, they're kind of really being
They're
jerks. And of course,
being
in a scene
so
moment
mean.
later, BJ will cop to that. But nevertheless, and I love Klinger's defense, right? Where he's like, you've got a red velvet pillow, you've got a distillery, and stuff like that. I mean, and he says, none of that stuff will land you in. And he says to Potter, you've got a painting of a thumb. None of that stuff is going to land you in Better Homes and Gardens. And then that's when Potter makes the argument. Yeah, well, but this is our front lobby, which is again valid, but nevertheless, they are being quite mean to our poor Klinger.
They're being so much. I find it. I feel like you don't even. I wouldn't even need to pick out a specific insult, but like the barrage, the actual barrage that comes from everybody, it was a lot. I think that they're. I don't know. Klinger's defense, really. It works really well for me because after all that. He makes a really good point. Now it doesn't land on the characters. The rest of the cast are still, laughing at him, but he is right. He everyone else get. I mean, by the end of the show, Margaret's tent is so decked out. It was already decked out to begin with, but like, everyone gets there. I think he calls it creature comforts, and like it's the little things that make it feel less like hell. And that's something I find interesting because it's the show spends a lot of time it's about sort of the little pockets of humanity that were created in the midst of the Korean War. And in this instance, it felt so strange that the characters are almost like actively going against that sort of that thing that they're fighting for this entire time, which is to have that personality and individuality, and then to laugh in the face of it because it's strange, it's an other to them. And yeah, Klinger's so quiet throughout all of that, and he does complain, and he does, he does do what he does later in the episode and resolves to. I wouldn't say it's really like take his revenge. It I'll get to that on sort of how he's taking his revenge is not really to do with like getting at other people and more like removing himself from the situation. But it yeah, I it's just so sad because Hawkeye calls it a rummage sale,
Yeah,
and like
they
that's
really get
so
kind of nasty. They
mean.
really do.
There's something about, and again, I find, so I mentioned that I like listening to the show, like it's a podcast. I like watching the show with the laugh track on, and it's something that gets petered out as you go along the show. But then I still find it interesting to examine who's laughing at what, like in terms of the characters, and in this moment, it is useful to understand that, oh, okay, the it's this is almost like weaponized laughter now. Like the butt of the joke here is something a little bit more sensitive than it would usually be. There's no punching, Punch, you know, there's no punching up here. It's all punching down, and we are not coming for the military. We're not coming for Charles's, you know, conservative old guard opinions on taste or bigotry. We're turning that around, and it's turning into laughter. Of like a big like bigotry in like laughing form. And so these characters that you love to hear them laugh because it's usually at something that deserves it. And then to have it be turned around to a fellow, you know, member of the 4077 in a way that feels incredibly personal is kind of haunting.
It really is. And it's to that point, Hawkeye and BJ come back and they stick their head in the door and they apologize. Hawkeye gets in yet another crack, though. He
Oh,
makes
he
a
does.
he refers to stuff not having good taste and things like that. And you
It's
know,
so
they
terrible.
it's that that's that awkward thing where you realize you may have gone a little too far, you know, and then you kind of try and walk it back a little bit, and Klinger kind of just give, you know, he pretends that it's all okay. I will mention, when I started a new job in 2018, by the way, working at CBS Television, ironically enough, the very network that aired MASH,
Wowie.
the only decoration I had in my office for an entire year was a framed picture of me and Loretta Swit. That is the only picture that I brought in because,
That's okay. That's iconic. I kind of love that. If I had one of those, I would also put that
Yeah, I did not want to personalize my, I meant to say cubicle. I didn't have my own office. I just didn't want to personalize my cubicle for whatever reason. I just didn't really want to get to know anybody, and I didn't want anybody to get to know me. Ironically enough, I would end up marrying one of my coworkers, but nevertheless,
up. Well, I mean, the picture worked.
I went all the way. I will say, one person walked by and looked at the photo and said, "Oh, is that your mom?" Which, you know, oh, if only.
Well, in some ways.
It's yes, in some ways, yes, that is exactly who that is. But yeah, for the longest time, the only personalized thing I had in my cubicle was that and that me and Loretta Swit. So there you go. So Hawkeye and BJ apologize, and Klinger says there's an old Arabic saying, when the going gets tough, the nomad gets going. And we see him call Sparky, and we figure out, and he says, "Sparky, what's up? Don't ask." And he says, "I need some discharge papers. I need some help filling out a set of discharge papers. I'll tell you who's getting sprung. The only friend I got in this camp," which is sort of funny because you realize he's sort of already involving Sparky in this deception, but he obviously trusts Sparky implicitly.
Yeah, which I find incredible. Sparky is such a real one for like being an off-screen character that we yeah who is I guess who's just very reliable un unless you know the plot tells him not to be. I find that a bit interesting because I mentioned it earlier, but Klinger isn't. Well, okay, I have sort of two trains of thought here. The first one being Klinger never directs his ire at someone in the way that the prank wars have traditionally gone in like in reaction to this. He's like, I gotta go. Like this is not he's not getting back at anyone. He's like actively looking for an exit in a way that I feel like the other characters don't really do. And it's interesting, the second sort of line of thought is that he's been, you know, with his crusade to get a Section 8 in the early seasons. He's always trying to sort of game the system from within. He's not really trying to just brute force his way out. And now that he has the sort of the power question mark to do that. He hadn't done that yet until he was driven to it. And so it's interesting seeing his, I don't know, kind of waffling on getting out. Because there's consequences, obviously. And I would not be brave enough to face any of that either. But like, circumstances really just made it seem like this was the best option. That's so sad.
Yeah, I mean, he comes to it pretty quickly, right? Like, it's only in that moment that they laugh at him, and then he immediately is like, I'm
Yeah,
out of
he's like
here.
pushed to it. Yeah, he was like, I can't. And like, again, I feel like it's such a, for me, in the way that I see Klinger, he loves his community. You know, he loves the people back home in Toledo. He loves his family. And like, he seems like the per a person who's used to being around a lot of people who, like, a very, well, what's the opposite of individualist? A collectivist. He's used to being around collectivist communities. And like, he's bringing that sort of attitude to the 4077 as well. And so he's always puttering around and, like, you know, helping people, getting a gallon of phenobarbital and all
Yeah,
that,
he comes from a
you
big
know.
family. There's the guys at Tony Paco's that he hangs out with.
Yeah, like he has so many friends and so many like people around him. And so I feel like in this moment, like the reason why he is like, well, screw this, I'm out of here, is because his community turned to get like his sort of like, you know, the only people that he has around him, his family right now, his, you know, they all made it very clear that, you know, or at least in that moment, it felt like they did not want him there. So he's like, bye. He has that self-respect.
He's immediately puts the plan into action. So then we have Hawkeye and BJ in the swamp, and they are playing darts with some inflatable rubber gloves. And by the
Oh,
way, we noticed they do the same gag a couple different. They've done a couple the same gag in a
their
couple different
game.
episodes where BJ is
Yeah.
about to throw a dart, and Hawkeye's in the way. And then notice Hawkeye does the same exact yell where he just
Every
wait a minute.
time.
You know,
Yeah.
he's, you know, he breaks the red. He has that. It's the same exact intonation that he had in a previous episode where BJ was throwing darts and he was about to hit Hawkeye. And BJ throws a dart in the reflection of a mirror. And that's just as Winchester is coming in the door. And that means the dart goes wild and it smashes Winchester's reading lamp. So we're like, okay, that's going to be a problem. Meanwhile, Nurse Kelly comes in and grabs Hawkeye and says, Sergeant Yi has tried to kill himself, and she points out that he broke his water glass. And by the time that she got over there, he had already cut his wrists. And Hawkeye points out he doesn't just need stitching; he needs reweaving. So he really dug him into himself,
Yeah.
quite bad, with the glass. And Margaret, of course, asks why would somebody do something like that. So there's that story. And then we're back in Potter's office, and we get Klinger practicing Potter's signature, doing my favorite imitation of any cast
So
member,
good.
which is Jamie
Yeah.
Farr's impersonation of Harry Morgan, a Sherman T. Potter. It doesn't
He's
sound like Harry
amazing.
Morgan, but yet it is
But
Harry Morgan as
yeah,
Colonel Potter.
it's like, yeah, it's the, he gets the essence of it. You know, I feel like Jamie Farr's, yeah, he's going a little too high pitched, but like, and nasally, but it's, that's exactly how he says it. So you immediately know who it is.
The intonation is exactly right. He even does the face, like he kind of scrunches up his face a little, like he's kind of
Yeah.
talking like that. Of course, he did that just previous. He'll do it in the next episode, in the dreams
He
episode.
will.
He'll do it again
Yes.
there. So we get two episodes in a row where he does the Colonel Potter voice. So he's practicing, and then BJ comes in to get a new light bulb from the one that, of course, he smashed of Winchester's. And then Klinger leans forward to cover the pad because he doesn't want BJ to see what's going on. And
Oh, dear.
then BJ says, why are you sitting like that? And Klinger goes, oh, lumbago. And of course, BJ's like, lumbago, unusual for someone so young. I will say, in the annals of like lines from MASH that we have used in our personal life, I still use that anytime I have something wrong with me that is indicative of my age, like my, like I'm stiff or something. But what's wrong?
Oh,
Lumbago. I always just say it's lumbago because it's just like
I
old
wow, I
person
should
disease.
put that in the back pocket for when in many years for me.
I'm shaking my head in sadness over here, but
It's
okay.
okay. No, don't worry. It's a beautiful thing. I feel like I have always been secretly a 65-year-old man in the body of someone much younger. So yeah, don't worry.
So yeah, I know. I never even knew what lumbago was for many years. I just knew it from MASH,
You
but I
were just
knew
like,
that it was.
MASH, it's the MASH
Yeah,
word.
I'm like, oh, it's an old person disorder. So therefore, okay, yeah, just what I said. I've lumbago.
Yeah,
It's
but
just a funny
it's
sounding
fun to
word too,
say.
lumbago. Like, what if it sounds?
Lumbago.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah. No, I for sure. Can I scoot back for a
Sure,
second?
sure.
Talk about Kelly here. Which is maybe an odd choice, but I find her presence in this her slightly emphasized presence in this episode interesting. Because from I think it's in season eight when she I think it's in Lifetime, I think, when she makes a joke about like ethnic measurements to
Yes. A
Hawkeye,
small egg
right?
roll, yes.
That's the one, yeah. And I so we learn there that she's part Chinese, part Hawaiian, I think is how she says it. And I find her presence here fascinating because she's the nurse who's in charge when this happens, and she's the one who gets Hawkeye. And I again, this is off-screen speculation, like it doesn't actually happen on there, but I do find it interesting that two sort of Chinese Americans had interacted with each other like off-screen. And I gotta wonder, like, if they got to talk about anything at all, because they have aligned experiences in this way. So the fact that Kelly's the one that finds Sergeant Yi is a little heartbreaking to me, because it sort of feels like it's I think equivalent to like what's the episode? What am I thinking of? It is oh dear. This is going to haunt me. What was it called? Heal Thyself, I think. Yeah,
Okay.
Heal Thyself. That's the one where you see like the ex Steve Newsom.
Yes, Steve
That's his
Newsom.
name,
Yep,
right?
yep, yep,
Steve
yep.
Newsom. His na you see him reflect the surgeon's experiences, and like it's harrowing because it's a, you know, it's like a glimpse into what could happen and what does happen to Hawkeye. And I think this is something that like could happen, sort of with Kelly and Sergeant Yi, not necessarily specifically in the same way, but it's like, oh, here's someone who looks like me, who has the same cultural background as me, and then this is what happens. I don't know.
Interesting.
Do I think
Okay.
there's something in that.
I'm always happy
What
when
about
Nurse
you?
Kelly gets
What do you
more
think
to
of that?
do. You know,
Yes,
I'm just,
agreed.
and not no offense to the other actors who played the other nurses, but to me, Kelly is like clearly the next below Margaret in terms of being in charge, kind of. And I always like when they give her
Yes.
more to do. So it's always great, right? So it's great to see
Yeah.
her.
And she has lots of little, you know, good little moments here. She pinches Hawkeye's cheek and Rosie's. That's cute.
Oh yeah, I love that one. Yeah. Hey, good looking. So then we're back. So BJ grabs the pad and he immediately figures out what's going on. Klinger reveals the plan. He shows the note that supposedly Colonel Potter wrote, and it could not be more folksy and unmilitary. I hereby give an official okie doke to this lad's
Okie
release.
doke.
You
Yeah.
know?
I've been thinking about that for since I watched it. Because
Most
it's
there
like
is.
it's something that's you know, like he would say that. But a very caricatured version of Potter. But Potter
Yes.
is also a walking caricature in many ways.
P.S. Please forgive the tear stains on this parchment, which is just another. So,
Oh.
and then they have this they have this debate about Klinger says, I'm going to get a 3-day pass. And by the time Colonel Pottinger says, I'm gone, I'll be a face in the crowd at a Mud Hens game. And then, of course, BJ points out, you dummy, Toledo is the first place they'll look. And Klinger says, maybe from Max Klinger, but not for Sven Lundgren. And I like that Klinger's like, that'll never work. You'll have to bleach your entire body, which I
Entire
guess.
body, yeah, which is like I find that line really interesting. I it's funny, but also it's like wow. I think it really stuck out to me because I've been rewatching season eight, sort of in preparation for this episode since I hadn't seen it since the first time I watched it, and I find it interesting that lots of characters remark on Klinger's skin color throughout. Like they call him swarthy. And that is it's used for laughs. It's used and it's something that is pushed back against on a number of episodes. I mean, the one where Charles is being racist to Italians, which is wild. it's explicitly framed as something that like you should not say and is bad to think, but it's interesting to me how obvious it is. Do you know what I mean? It's like such a again, it's that idea of visual signifiers of ethnicity. It's like how you are perceived immediately. It complicates your situation. It's like how other people react to you. And so, yeah, Klinger would have to bleach his entire body in order to pass as a Swede. And it really, I think, I don't know, encapsulates how ridiculous of a plan it is, but also like how tied to racial identity, how much like yeah the ties to racial identity that we have in this episode.
It's a little similar to an observation we had, I think, last year on the show, where Margaret is the only female character on the show, of the only regular, and so therefore, the writing staff, which is almost entirely white men, when they want to write a plot about a woman, it's got to go through Margaret because
It's
they
got to go
simply
through
do
Margaret.
not have any other character to bring that aspect to life
Yeah.
with. And so they've got a character like Klinger who is not Anglo-Saxon white. Well, therefore,
Yeah.
any sort of
Any
insight
race
or
story?
any
Yeah.
story or insight or joke about ethnicity is going to go through Klinger because they just don't
Yeah.
have any other place. Now, again, I'm sure, and in the cold light of day, some of the jokes are a little like wincy because you're like, oh, that wouldn't really pass muster nowadays. But at the same time, you're like, yes, but in an era when a lot of TV shows were just white people, MASH was one of the most popular shows on
Yeah.
television, and it had a main cast
And it
member
had,
who was not that.
yeah. And I find that, again, this is sort of what I find really interesting about Klinger is just like his presence on the show and also what Jamie Farr brought to the character, which is interesting, because he. So, for a lot of the early seasons, he, because of his cross-dressing, a lot of the jokes that are at his expense are usually about that, right? And then as his role is expanded in the show, and as he takes the company clerk baton from Radar, he starts shedding the dresses. And it's only, and even like, midway through the show, he only, dons the nurse hat and earrings combination, which I do really like. Very cute. But like a lot of the jokes at Klinger's, expense now are about race, because that was something that was, sort of acknowledged that he's Lebanese American early on. But then now it's the only thing that he's known for because the dresses are kind of an afterthought now. And we're throwing out some academic terms now. I find this sort of in line with this idea of self-orientalism, which is this sort of idea of, in order to create the image of being like an authentic other, group to sort of contrast with white American culture, and sort of, to create like an like to make that line clear, and using that division and sort of otherness to sort of market yourself, is, I think, occasionally what happens with Klinger's character, where it's like he's talking about his cultural heritage and, being a desert person without having been in a desert, I don't think, in the same way that he means. It's like he's playing it up to sort of for, I don't know. It really depends on how you'd see his character, where it's like he could be using it to sell something, or he could be using it to appear, more crazy for the Section 8, or it could be his sort of trying to grapple with being a second generation immigrant, who's grown up largely in American culture, and like only having a little access to where, his like cultural heritage. Like he has only a little bit of it, but he's not mired in it. He doesn't, speak the language entirely. And I think that's a sort of, I don't know, a very variable part of Klinger's character.
I've said this so many other times on the show. It was such a shame that after MASH, the show got treated so ignominiously by the network, because I actually thought there was a lot to mine there if they had wanted
There
to, and they just
was.
didn't. They just did not
It's so
allow it to
sad.
breathe, because I think having Klinger in a sort of best years of our lives scenario really had potential, and they just mangled that
Agreed.
show and crapped on it, and then it got canceled. And three of the greatest characters to ever be on a television screen never got like an official goodbye, right? I mean, they just disappeared from the TV screens one day. But
And
that, I don't want to bring that up again.
it's
It's a discussion for another time.
this is my show. I should, on that, I find it really, I don't know, interesting, because again, we're scooting to the end of the show, so I won't talk about it too long. But like, when we get to Goodbye, Farewell, Amen, and we see Klinger in a like strike up a, American GI Korean woman relationship, and then like, in addition to his being an immigrant in the States, now he's an immigrant in Korea as like a member of the US Army, and he's fallen in love with someone who in Korea, and like whatever that situation's going to be, it's so complicated. It's so transnational, and a story of diaspora and immigrants that could have had so much going for it, and I would have been all over it.
So anyway, BJ, BJ, and all that is in there. All that is in there. So BJ argues Klinger out of going away with the scheme, and Klinger basically says, "You're not going to rat on me, are you?" And BJ's like, "No, I came in here for a light bulb, because snitches get stitches." So then he leaves, and Klinger immediately grabs the pad out of the trash can and says, too bad. I'm really going to miss him." And that's our act break. So of course we find out that Klinger is intending to continue on with this plan. We then come back, and he is talking to Winchester, ordering the new light bulb, and he orders one. And Winchester's like, "You're only ordering one?" And Klinger's like, "That's all I need. I don't have something like I have my own lamp." And Winchester says, "Whatever became of your frivolous pet-like demeanor?" And he walks away, and he says, "By the way, Corporal, He says, I like you better like this. So I like you, I prefer you this
Oh,
way, which
my
is.
mean little boy. Charles, my mean little boy.
And then Klinger re responds to him, I won't miss. So then he's preparing some papers. Sidney Freeman arrives. He's being driven by,
Yes.
yes, he's being, there's a Jeep driver who is going to talk to Klinger and he's going to grab the forms. He is played by actor James Loft. This is his sixth of seven MASHes. He was the Jeep
Wow.
driver who brought Winchester to the 477th for the first time. He's the AT, alternate transportation guy. He played a different character every time, but he did seven MASHes eventually.
That's so beautiful that he was a driver for many of them.
And he's still working to this day. He was just in the Martin
Gorgeous.
Scorsese film Killers of the Flower Moon from a couple of years ago. So
Oh,
my man is
wow.
still
All
working.
right.
Good for him. So then we
Yeah.
get introduction of everyone's favorite, Sidney Friedman. And
Love.
Klinger is pissy with him and is kind of like weirdly passive aggressive. Sidney's sort of ignoring him, and then he finally says, you know, Klinger, can you put a, you know, can you hold that thought? He's like, Sergeant Yi is basically waiting for me, and then he heads in. So he senses something is wrong with Klinger, but he just doesn't have time to deal with it at
He
the
doesn't have
moment.
time. He's got more pressing issues. Oh, it's so sad because Sidney's usually in, Klinger's court. He's always been. But yeah, no time. Not right now.
So the Jeep driver is asking for the paperwork. And he's like, Klinger seems reticent to give it to him. And then he's like, you know, are you going to give it to me or not? And then Klinger finally hands it to him. And then this guy, James Hoff, he says, you know, that doctor could do a world of good. Well, take it from a guy who's playing with a full deck. And he points to
Oh,
his head.
knock
So
knock, yeah.
thank you. Thanks so
Oh
much for
dear.
that.
Yeah.
I love all that. And then.
I do love when Klinger gets to do the looking into the camera like he's in the office thing where it's like he's like, can you believe this guy? I do like that he gets lots of these this episode.
So then we find Sidney Freedman talking to Hawkeye, and he points out that Sergeant Yi served in World War II, and he talks about
Yes.
people that try and commit suicide and often what they, you know, what their background is. So then he comes over and he says hello to Margaret, and he says hello to Mulcahy, and then. Now he doesn't say hello to Kelly, which you know you understand he just they're not going to write that because Kelly Nakahara was not one of the regulars, and but it is a little weird, right, that he comes over and says hello to two of the three people sitting at the,
Who are there?
you know, who are there, and then, but then he
Yeah.
does say, he leans over and he says, Lieutenant, would you mind if I talk to your patient? Which I love that line. I think that's so sweet that he treats Kelly with that respect of saying, this is your patient right now. Is it okay if I talk to him? So I just, it's like, Sydney, I love you so much.
Yeah, and he's again, he's always so aware. I mean, it's his job, right? Of like how to conduct himself, and he is always doing it with compassion in mind. So it's great. And again, more acknowledgement that Kelly and Yi have, spoken and interacted in my beautiful mind.
Well, she answers. She
They
does say,
have.
she says to him, you can talk, but he's not big on answers, doctor. So there you go. They clearly have
That's
had some level
true.
of a
They
conversation.
did. Okay. This will fuel my imagination for
There you
days to
go.
come.
And it's not just your fevered imagination, MJ. It's actually right there
Yeah.
in the text. So there
It's
you
in the
go.
text. Wonderful.
It's no longer sub, it's actual text. So Sidney sits down and starts talking to Sergeant Yi. And of course, he's kind of guarded and he says, they tell you I was nuts. And he says, you know, no, but I heard that you tried to hurt yourself. Why did you try that? And he says, I want to go back and fight. Don't you rather go home? Gold bricks go home. And Sidney's like, you've been badly wounded. That hardly makes you a gold brick, Michael. And then he says, may I call you Michael? You can call me whatever you want. And then he says, you know, I think I can help you. Would you let me try? And you see, Yi is resistant. He's not even looking at Sidney. He's sort of staring off into the middle distance. And then he finally kind of turns his head and is like, okay. And then Sidney pulls out this pencil and starts twirling it backwards and forwards, and the camera actually zooms in on it a little bit, and you're kind of like, what? You know, what is this? What's happening?
Yeah, I
What's
didn't know what was
happening there?
happening the first time I watched it either. I was like, that's beautiful. Are we doing an eye test now? Because
Yeah,
I've done that.
it is a little like, wait, what is happening? So we're then in Potter's office, and Potter apologizes to Klinger about making fun of his all of his decorations. And I like that Klinger really kind of milks it, and he says, "If the colonel really cares about my shattered feelings," which I love, my shattered feelings. He's like
Yeah.
such a drama queen.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And I would, you know what? Yeah. Those feelings were shattered. All of you stepped on them.
So Potter offers to give Klinger a 3-day pass, and he says, "Where do you stow those forms? Upper W for Whippy?" And he says, "Got one on his desk," and he signs it over, and even does the Sherman T.
He does
Potter thing.
Sherman D. Potter, that's
Yeah,
right.
he hands it to Klinger, and I love that he says, "Sir, you're too kind," and he says, "Compliments of the management," which I just that's just the fun turn of phrase. And then he goes one further, and he says, "Feel free. I understand the idea that you want to have something homey, so feel free to put up any one of your doodads, except of course this very offensive cheese
The
that
cheese.
Klinger got sent." And then of course
Yeah.
that immediately realize makes Klinger realize that he feels bad about what he did because he has put the paperwork already in motion.
All through.
He runs to find BJ, who is getting ready to fish, who I think we've never seen fish before. I
We,
don't think they've
nope,
suggested that.
he, yeah, he's now into fishing. Maybe it's the hat. It like possessed his mind and he's like, well, I have to start fishing.
I guess so. Where did the fishing pole come from? Because he has like a real fishing pole. It's not just like a stick. It's like
Yeah, it's like an actual pole.
an
Yeah, and
actual,
he's not known.
the whole thing, kind of thing. And of course, the BJ's penchant for fishing will come back to haunt him in a
Unfortunately.
later, unfortunately, in a later episode. And so BJ is going to use the last Jeep to go fishing, and Klinger's like, "You know those forms I didn't send? They're on their way to G1 right now." And Klinger's BJ's like, "Well, if I get, I'm not helping you, I'm not going to help be part of the getaway." And they're doing this kind of Abbott Costello double talk conversation where
Yeah.
BJ is like, "Well, no, if you want to take a Jeep, it means you're leaving." And Klinger's like, "No. What it means, I want to stay." And it's just a bunch of gibberish to the point where BJ even says, like, "Man can only resist so much gibberish," and he gives Klinger the Jeep. So there you go.
Yeah. I mean, it worked. He ground him down.
Yeah.
I find this bit interesting because wow, I find this entire episode interesting. I've been using that word loads. Where it's this new dynamic between a like an officer and the company clerk, because we've had the sort of Hawkeye radar relationship, and it's this kind of mentor student older brother, just guiding a young person, type of relationship. But then because the le playing field is leveled with BJ and Klinger here, where there's not a much of, there's not that much of an obvious age difference. There's the rank doesn't exactly matter, and yeah, there's just two adults speaking to each other. And BJ is he's kind of flippant about Klinger. He's already attempted to convince him, so he's not going to keep doing it. And so I like this new dimension that's been added to their relationship, where BJ is going to is Klinger's friend and will help to a degree, but man wants to go fishing. Stop bothering him.
I mean, I would imagine losing your one day of fun would be kind of a big deal because you
That's
don't get a
actually
lot of
true.
that,
Yeah.
you don't get a lot
Yeah,
of
his blessed
chances
alone time.
to go have fun. Yeah, but yeah, right, alone time. He's not even hanging out with Hawkeye. He's just going fishing by himself. So then we cut back to Sydney talking to Sergeant Yi. Nurse Kelly comes over and he says, "I think we can take these restraints off." and we see that he is in fact twitching his hand. We even see Sydney kind of look at it, notice it. And then when Kelly says it's time for your pill, Yi says, "What are you talking about? You just gave me a pill." And she's like, "What do you mean?" And he says, "Well, you gave me a pill when the doctor came over." And Kelly says, "That was 2 hours ago."
2 hours ago.
Right? Which leaves Yi looking confused. Again, Kelly gets a lot to do in this episode.
I know. It's I'm banging my pots and pans in the streets, whooping, hollering.
So then Hawkeye and Sydney are talking, and Hawkeye is sort of like, "Are you sure that that's a good idea?" And Sydney is like, "He's in no danger." And Hawkeye says, "What are you talking about? He's twitching like a nervous wreck." And then they head out into Klinger's office to discuss what happened. And he says it's a matter of deep-seated guilt. In all his 10 years in the service, this is the first time he's ever fought an Asian enemy. He says he might be pointing a gun sight at people right out of his own family. And Hawkeye says that's like me declaring war on Crabapple Cove.
Crabapple Cove.
And then Sidney says it's even worse because he has to kill Chinese to be a good American. Then he has to kill himself to
To
be a
kill
good
himself.
Chinese. So I just gave him a pseudo symptom that every time he wants to harm himself, he should just twitch his hand. Now, okay, my only minor complaint about this episode is I feel like Sidney solves this very quickly. And
Agreed.
if had it just been me, and this is my predilection stated in many, many previous episodes of the show, to me, like you could have cut the Klinger story down to get more of this. Now, that could just be because I want more Sydney, but I do feel like Sydney, like we've never seen Sydney hypnotize anybody before, right? So it's like, oh,
That's all fade to black. We
this is
never
like
saw
a.
any of it.
This is a new tool in his toolbox, and it's almost like he shows up, he immediately knows what to do, hypnotizes Yi, solves it. They have their discussion with Hawkeye, and then it's done. It's like I just wish it had been given like another 2 minutes of screen time. I don't
What
know.
were you
Am I
saying,
being
Jeremy?
is that do you think I'm being too critical on it?
No. I mean, this is something that I think is a, I was about to call it an affliction of season 8. But I feel like this is when the division of two plots becomes really clear, and the attempt to either tie them off together in a neat little ribbon by the very end, or just have one peter out, because it just becomes really obvious here. And I think both of these stories would have been really interesting ones on their own, as I think for really a lot of the episodes in season 8, which is it's interesting looking back on it from early seasons of MASH, where like entire some things that would have taken up half an episode later on are entire episodes. Like I noticed this with the Yalu Brick Road being, one where the camp is downed by sickness, and then we're down to Margaret Mulcahy and another surgeon, in this case Charles, which is the same story as Carry On Hawkeye, and that's like a whole episode. And there's a another plot in Yalu Brick Road where BJ and Hawkeye are stuck outside and they don't have a jeep. What do we do? And so I think that, oh yeah, I'm really with you there. I would have liked the breathing room.
I just it would have been interesting to see Sydney try and get to know Yi and get rebuffed because Yi has got his defenses up, and then he turns to the hypnosis. Like, okay, the normal way of treating this patient is not going to work because this guy
He's
is
resistant.
so resistant. So I'm gonna go through his subconscious mind. But it's like he's got it. He just boom, he just pulls it out and does it. And you're like, wow, okay.
And I find it interesting because it's clearly saying something that's very interesting, which is what would it have been like to be Asian American and have to fight in the Korean War? That is incredibly compelling because the Korean War, I mean, the presence of Asian Americans in general is the is a result of lots of historical shenanigans, to begin with, but
Historical
like
shenanigans.
so many historical shenanigans. But the Korean War itself is like so, it is like a battlefield that the US and Soviet Russia were like sort of walking in on. It's like a hotbed of East Asian conflict where, like, from the 1600s, because the this is where you find out that I enjoy East Asian history. But the Qing Dynasty ended in 1911, and then that's when China fractured into two, and then the Chinese Civil War followed that. And then following that was a war between, there was the Sino-Japanese War, which only finished because of World War II. And so like there's some conflict happening between China and Japan. Meanwhile, Korea has been annexed by Japan the entire time, and now achieving their freedom in like 1945 are like, yay, we've done it. And then immediately the, you know, the Chinese Communist Party wins, and then Korea's in trouble again. And all of this, I'm giving all of this historical context because this reflected back on the Asian Americans, it like back, you know, over there. It all that, all those politics reflected back on them. And we have this sort of need to prove yourself and your Americanness and your right to be there being so threatened, and then to join the army, and then or be drafted, join the army, and come to Korea. What a, I don't know, history of just carried pain where now you have to fight yourself. And like in terms of national identity, who are you aligned with really? And you are being accused from all sides of being a traitor, right? You're not winning points from anybody. And so his like there's so much going on in Yi's mind. He intentionally kept himself on the field because he didn't want to make it out. And this is an attitude that was very common to a lot of Asian American soldiers. That's so tragic.
It's a heady idea to drop in the middle of again a show, being aired for 25 million people in, 12 minutes of screen time, maybe, right? Out of half the episode, maybe even
Yeah,
less
it's a
than
lot
that.
of big
And
ideas.
a lot of
A lot
big
of it,
ideas. And the.
which, yeah, I admire it. This is part of why I'm so fascinated by this episode because it tries to tackle it, and it doesn't do it as, you know, well as I would like it to, but also it achieves a lot.
Yeah. And they even refer to at the end of the scene where Hawkeye says, well, it's good that we, keeping it better that he twitches his hand than a second try killing himself. And then Sidney says, second try, he's been trying to kill himself since he
Killed
got to
himself.
Korea. And you realize that's why he took all of those dangerous missions, was just
Yeah, and why he's so decorated. And I
self.
find it so interesting that like he has all this military track record, right? And it's a thing that impresses Margaret, all the way back in an earlier scene. It impresses her so much that, you know, and she's a woman who really cares about that thing, you know, like military achievements. And so in the same scene where he's trying to prove his Americanness via baseball, he's also inadvertently trying, not he's not doing it on purpose, but he's proving his military sort of, you know, he's like flashing it as a badge, saying, I'm allowed to be here, and you can keep like, you know, using me in this way, like, you know, to a military official.
So, We then cut to our quasi main plot, and it's Klinger barging in
To
to
me.
I Klinger barging into I-Corps. We see there's a sergeant played by actor David Kramer. This is his second of two MASH appearances. He did a little bit of TV other than this. He was on Falcon Crest, the Waltons, things like that. We then meet General Headley, played by actor Philip Bruns, born 1931, passed away 2012. Great career for this guy in movies like Flashdance, the original Out of Towners, The Stuntman, My Favorite Year, which is two movies right in a row there with Peter O'Toole. And that's just four credits among
Wow.
hundreds of other things that this guy did. I like that on the wall behind General Hadley is a picture of the president, in this case, Harry Truman. Even though in many previous episodes of MASH, it's been established that Eisenhower is now the president, all of a sudden Harry Truman is back to being president. So, okay.
Mash time is so beautiful.
It's
When
very,
is
very.
anything happening? All the time? How long is the Korean War? 3 or 11 years? Who knows?
Talk about historical shenanigans. So then Klinger begs to come in, and he explains I love that he actually he says that'll be all, Sergeant, and he actually slams the door in the guy's face, which is just a fun little visual gag there.
Huge, yes.
And then he says, "Did you see some discharge papers from someone, Maxwell Q. Klinger?" And I like that the guy says, "I certainly did. I just went through them. My heart goes out to that man as what's left of his family," which is. What's left of his family. And he says, "I will not rest till that boy's home." And then Klinger has to say, "The whole thing is a bogus tissue of lies." And the general's like, "How can it be? There's a letter from a priest." And Klinger says, "I'll grant you it's a brilliant forgery. This Klinger guy is just incredibly incredibly brilliant but twisted." He says, "Brilliant but twisted." And then he says, "Perhaps you're familiar with his checkered history." And then reveal that, of course, virtually every general in the Asian theater is familiar with Klinger because they've gotten some inappropriate mail from him. And he mentions that he sent Klinger sent him bonbons at one point. And then we get General finally say, "Wait a minute, I think I know you. You're well." First of all, he says, "You're good. What's your name?" And he says, "Corporal." And Klinger goes, "Walter O'Reilly," which is a callback. The Radar gets more callbacks in season eight than I think any other character has ever gotten in the history of the show, because I think there's like four mentions in season eight and season nine alone. And then he says, "I know you. You're Radar. And we've spoken on the phone." And that makes Klinger have to talk about that. Yes, he's Irish. He's Black Irish. And
Again, really interesting. There's lots of like race and ethnicity related jokes that I like do land. I'm like, haha, yeah, that is a little funny.
yeah, you don't look at Jamie Farr and think you can get away with that his last name is O'Reilly. And the general wants to bring charges up on Klinger, and then Klinger manages to say Potter is so mad at Klinger, he wants to handle it himself. And Hadley's like, "Okay, he's had to deal with Potter's had to deal with Colonel's bull all the time, Klinger's bull all the time. I guess we'll let him have his hide." So he grabs the paperwork and he splits. And then we have Hawkeye sending Sergeant Yi off in the stretcher. We see that he is still twitching, sort of constantly. I hope that Sergeant Yi is not right-handed, because that's really going to interfere with him
That would,
writing
yeah.
down
Oh,
a lot of
dear.
stuff. Maybe they had this conversation. He had a conversation with Kelly where he found out where he's right-handed or left-handed. So he's a
You're
lefty.
fueling my beautiful dreams.
There you
Thank
go.
you.
That's partly what I'm here to do. So then the Hawkeye and Sydney and Margaret are talking, and Hawkeye says, "Well, our job may be a little bit easier than yours, Sydney. At least we can always see where they're bleeding." And that is it for Sydney Freedman in this episode. All too brief of Sydney Freedman.
Oh, yes. Again, would have loved if he'd come on a little. I know you were going through a lot of things, Alan Arbus, but it would have been so nice.
It would have been really nice. Would have been really, really nice. So that's the end of the main episode. And then we come back from our little bumper, and we see that Klinger has in fact chosen one article, which is this Nice little lamp, which will never
It's
be seen
cute.
again on the show, by the
I know,
way. Which
sadly.
I
I
don't know
would say
why. I
wished
know
it
you would think it
stayed,
would have been just
but
maybe some sort of lighting thing, but yes, we'll never see it again. And we see that Potter has discovered a pad with his name on it a bunch of times. Sherman T. Potter, Sherman T. Potter, Sherman T. Potter. And Klinger comes up with the story where he says, "You were sleepwalking, sir, and you must have been signing it in your sleep." And Potter's like, "Oh, okay, well, all right, I guess that makes sense, okay." And then he sounds like he's buying it. And then just as he walks away, he says, "By the way, you put too much swoop on the tea." And that is the end of our episode.
Wow, that was what an episode. It's there's so much going on here. It's
I like that Potter knew it from the beginning and he sort of let Klinger
he
go out on that
let it
limb.
happen. Yeah, it's interesting how much I don't know. It Potter's leeway with command is very is again it depends on who's writing the episode and what kind of thing is happening, but he's very happy to let Klinger do some things and not and is and draws like a big line in the sand for others, so I'm glad he's being nice here. I find it interesting that he was the one of the first people to come back to Klinger with an apology at all. Maybe it was because he was the one who called for the other, officers to come in, and then that caused everything. But
It might be because he deals with Klinger the most, so he's noticed the
that's
most that
true.
Klinger's been surly the whole
Yeah,
time.
because he's been really upset. Who knows? But yes, thank you, Potter.
It's a great episode. It's a great, like I said, I think it's a little imperfect, and that's just because we're just greedy for Sydney. And so if you're going to bring
Yes.
Sydney in, give Sydney more to do, because we can bring Klinger in next week and have him get a
Greedy for
plot, you know,
greedy.
but greedy,
Yeah.
but otherwise a very, 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 very good episode. Good performance by Clyde Kwatsu. Overall a really, really,
Yeah.
really good episode of the show.
I rewatched this again recently to prepare, and remembering how incensed it made me the first time around, and now that I have slightly more distance from that, I also found myself enjoying it more than I thought I would. Again, I had forgotten Clyde Kusatsu's involvement there, and I love him as Paul Yamato later, so I got excited seeing him. He's also. This is slightly tangential. He's notably Japanese, which I find interesting because I believe Michael Yee is meant to be Chinese American, which is a whole thing about Asian casting in MASH. But there's that could be its own episode about how complicated that was for just Asian actors in general. But yeah, he does wonderfully. He has this restrained performance that little punch down into the bed. It does so much, and his I don't know. He has this range from talking about his wartime exploits in this, his casual way, as if he's just, grabbing a couple of drinks with some buddies and they're talking baseball, that kind of thing. And then when after his suicide attempt, he is, I don't know, he there's this emptiness to him, or that, shell shock that he does so well. So wonderful to balance that out with Alan Arbus. And you know what? I'm glad that I'm glad that Klinger's still here. I wish he got to tell off everyone a little bit more because we don't see them again. Sort of I guess there's like no real resolution to that. they were like Margaret,
Margaret and Winchester never apologized, of course.
yeah, exactly. And of course they wouldn't, right?
No.
A lot of scenes with Margaret and Klinger are very sort of, I don't know, difficult for me to watch, especially after that. But even BJ and Hawkeye's very half-hearted apology, it sort of rings hollow for me because they're still giggling and they're still laughing about it. So we're kind of left unresolved, and due to our sitcom reset, that never happened. That laugh is gone.
Father Mulcahy doesn't get much to do in this episode, and that's just
No,
because
he doesn't.
you couldn't have him in on the scene where they laugh at his stuff, because Mulcahy would have never done that, and then you would have had to write that. And you would have, because he would have been like, doctors, jocularity, what do you do? He would have never allowed, he would have chastised them for doing that. And they didn't want to write to that. So therefore, he's missing from all those scenes. So he's in the scenes with Yi at the beginning, and then that's it. But that's
Yeah, and
just
then he
because,
disappears.
yeah, because he would have gone after he would have gone after them all. He would have been like,
He
what are you
really would
doing? This
have.
isn't right. So yeah, that's why poor
I
Winchester didn't
actually
know what to do with
never
it.
noticed that, which is that's really that's huge. I now have that in mind. Because I feel like it would have been such a different episode if he was there and told them off for that, because then it would have less so. I feel like it would have taken some of the agency away from Klinger, and like lessened the impact of it, because then it would have been there was someone is in his court, someone stands up for him, and then like him doing all of that would have, there's less of an impetus for it.
I mean, right. He could have been the one that discovered the plot and tried to talk Klinger out of it.
That's
But then,
true.
but then BJ would have not had the chance to sort of apologize again for being a jerk about it. So yeah. So William Christopher just had to kind of sit the show out this one week, which happened every so often on the show. So do you have a favorite line or joke from the episode?
Oh no. I didn't think about that. I think I my favorite one is probably the I'm not going to be able to quote it because I'm not that kind of person. But it's got to be Klinger shooting back at everybody about the better homes.
You've
And
got a
what was the other thing?
distillery, and you've got a red velvet pillow, and you've got a painting of a thumb, which is, again, he's
That's
correct
the
on all
one.
those.
That's the one.
He's correct
Yeah,
on all of
he's
those
like he
observations.
is pinpointing just really straight to the heart of it, and it didn't quite read to everyone else, but for me, I hear you, Klinger. I hear you. You're right. Tell him. Get him.
My favorite line is also a line from Klinger's, and it's when he has to do his impersonation of Radar to General Hadley, and he goes, "Oh, golly whiz, a million
Oh,
times,
golly
yes, your
whiz, yeah,
colonelness." I just love that
that was really
he's
good.
doing it. So, which means in this episode, we get Klinger imitating both Potter and Radar in a single episode. So, Jamie Farr, a lot to do this week.
I love that imitation because it's sort of I don't know, it is a joke, but also like just like within there, I don't know. He's like it's interesting because he's again become the company clerk and he's taking on that sort of role within the story. And it's that, I don't know, there's like a metaphysical level to this where it's like, oh yes, that was Radar's role, and then we sort of get to hear him again. And I find that it's quite cute. I
Well,
miss that
that's
little man.
well. I said I think we've accomplished a lot this episode, MJ. I mean, we've figured out that the Kelly Michael Yee relationship is not just in your mind. That's an important thing. I think
That's true.
we've made some real progress here in this session.
I know.
So,
Thank you, Sydney.
well, MJ, thank you so much for doing the show. I really appreciate it. It was absolutely wonderful to get to speak to you
Yeah,
and have
thank
you
you
on the
so
show.
much. Yeah, I had lots of fun talking and about a show that we love very much.
Absolutely. So, well, thank you again for coming on, and thank you all for listening. Of course, you can find all the back episodes of MASHcast on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. You can find me over on Blue Sky under Rob Kelly Creative. And finally, if you want to support the Find Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. There you're going to unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So, a big salute to Adam Ackerman, Dennis Bailey, Daryl Clark, James Kay, Michael Kelly, David Mann, Matt McLean, Lisa P., Brady Palmer, Joe Perino, Stan Peel, Michael Porter, Nicholas Prom, Rob Riley, Adam Sanders, Stefan Van Schaik, Britt Schramm, Billy Shulman, and Mike Thomas. I really do appreciate the support, everybody. So that is going to do it. Thanks so much for listening. We will see you next week. But until then, that is all.
One, two, three.
What in the hell? You behemoth! Look what you've done! You've broken the bulb in my reading lamp.
Ah, oh, what a shame. You'll have to wait till sunup to find out if the little engine could.